Hello and welcome to the Crisis Point Podcast. I'm Eric Sammons, your host and the editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine. Before I get started with today's episode, I'd just like to encourage people to like and subscribe to the channel. Let other people know about it. We've had a big uptick of people subscribing on YouTube as well as on the podcast. And I really appreciate that. So continue to do so and tell your friends about the podcast. Also, if you want to support the work of Crisis Magazine, just go to crisismagazine.com/donate to make a donation, and we really appreciate that as well. We're fully supported 100% by donors who support the program. Okay, so today I'm going to do a little bit something different, and I fully expect, just right off the bat, I fully expect that this podcast will be one of my least viewed, least listened to podcasts. The reason I say that is because it's going to be positive. It's going to be optimistic. It's going to say some good things. Obviously, our magazine is named Crisis. This podcast is called Crisis Point. So we're focused a lot on the crisis in the church. And we talk about the crisis in the church. We talk about it very directly. We don't mince words. We don't try to hide from it. We don't try to cover things up. And usually, the more controversial we are, the more direct we are, usually the more views we get, the more listens we get. But the fact is I do think there's something to be said for the fact that it can become discouraging. It can become, we can become cynical and we can get discouraged about this current state of the church. Because the fact is that we are in a crisis right now. I mean, there's just no way that you can deny that. I'm currently working on an article for the magazine about the fact that in the Archdiocese of Cincinnati, my home diocese, there's a plan to shut down 70% of the parishes. And I think it's a realistic plan, frankly. And that should tell us what kind of crisis we're in. And right now, for example, I mean, lately Pope Francis, I don't know if he's decided to up his game or something, but lately it seems like almost every day he's saying something, doing something that brings scandal to the faithful. This synod on synodality is just, I mean, obviously a joke, and is going, has real potential to harm the church. So when I go into this podcast today, I'm talking about good things. I don't want people to think that all of a sudden I'm become a Pollyanna, that I think everything is fine. No, the whole point is I don't think it's fine. I think your typical parish, your typical bishop, even your typical priest often does not get the problems in the church today. They're not really willing to confront them. And so we're in a real crisis. But I do think at the same time that I think that we're in a real crisis, a crisis that is ranks up there in the crises of the church in history with Arianism, the Protestant Revolution, things like that. I really do think today's crisis ranks up there with them. I don't know how you can deny that with the millions of people who are leaving the church. Clearly, that's a problem. But that being said, I really do think there are signs of hope. Things to give us hope. And I want to kind of share some of those with you today. I recently took a road trip. I drove over 1,800 miles, went through 8 different states, took 7 days, and I visited the camp, among other places. I visited the campus of Thomas More College in New Hampshire, Franciscan University of Steubenville in Steubenville. And it's funny, just an aside real quick, I originally bought plane tickets for this. And then a few hours after I bought them, I realized I did not want to participate in the lie that is required masking. We all know, everybody knows, that there's no purpose in required masking. It does not help stop the spread or anything like that. Yet we continue to make people do it. So I just was like, I realized, what am I doing? I would have had to wear a mask if I got on a plane. I just said, nope, I'm not going to do it. So I canceled my flight and I ended up getting a rental car. Saved me some money. Obviously, it took a little bit more time, but saved me some money. But I visited, like I said, visited Thomas More College in New Hampshire, visited Franciscan University in Steubenville, Ohio. I met with various people, including Bishop Schneider. Obviously, the last podcast episode was an interview I had with Bishop Schneider. I also got to have dinner with him and spend some time with him. I met Phil and Lila Lawler. Lila has been on the podcast before. In fact, Phil was an editor of Crisis Magazine, I think back in the 1980s. The line of crisis editors is very distinguished until it gets to me. But Phil and Lila, I met them. Roger McCaffrey, I think he was the founder of Latin Mass Magazine. I just know he's been defending the Latin traditional Latin Mass for decades, a real giant in that area. Also, Scott Hahn, Dr. Scott Hahn, when I was in Steubenville, Dr. Michael Cirilla, some others. And during this time that I spent, I really, you know, it could be exhausting. You could say you spend all this time on the road. You go, I hate traveling. I hate being in a hotel. I hate being away from my family. And so it could have just been an exhausting trip, but it really wasn't. It was invigorating. It wasn't exhausting. It was invigorating because what happened was I saw with my own eyes and I was able to talk to people that really left me with signs of hope. It left me hope for the future of the church. The first sign of hope was Bishop Schneider, Bishop Athanasius Schneider. I know people could say, well, we're talking about an auxiliary bishop in a faraway country in Kazakhstan as a sign of hope. Isn't that more depressing than anything that we have to look to somebody that obscure to be a sign of hope? But to me, this is, when I look at biblical history, when I look at salvation history, I see this as the way God works. He usually doesn't work in the actions of the great leaders, in the actions of all the people. In fact, the people usually go against him. What he does is he picks individuals. He picks saints. And yes, I actually do think Bishop Schneider is one of those saints today. And he picks them to be his instruments. And he does that because he wants people to know that this is my work that I'm doing. And that's only known if you see small people, insignificant people, obscure people from faraway lands doing these things. And so I really feel like that is a sign of hope, even though he is obscure and whatnot, and it's easy to dismiss him as a nobody in the eyes of the world. That's exactly what God uses. And we have to remember that in these times of crisis, the fact is it is a small number of people who resist, who fight for God. I mean, look at the Arian crisis of the fourth century. You know, the term was Athanasius against the world. And I think Bishop Schneider's religious name is pointing back to St. Athanasius. But it was a small, very small number of people in leadership, that is, that really fought for the truth. A lot of the lay people were Orthodox, but the bishops on a whole were not. They were heretics. Sound familiar? And so I think, though, what happened is, so lay people of the time, try to put yourself in, for example, the year 330 AD, and you're an Orthodox layman, you would probably think, you would not be wrong to think that, man, maybe this isn't going to work out after all, this whole Christianity thing, the Catholic Church, because it looked very dire. Yet, of course, we know what happens is God wins in the end, as he always does. So meeting with Bishop Schneider and getting to interact with him and seeing his strength, his ability to balance truth and charity, I think is very inspiring. And I would encourage you to watch or listen to the last podcast that we did, my interview with him, because I really think what he does is he really does do that balance between charity and truth. He does not mince words. I mean, he just does not mince words. But yet at the same time, he is a very charitable man, and he loves God very much. And I saw that directly when I was interacting with him. I also was very encouraged just meeting with these leaders like the Lawlers, like Scott Hahn, like Roger McCaffrey, because these are people who are fighting for us. These are people who are fighting for the truth, fighting for the Catholic faith. They get beat up. They get criticisms. They get people knocking around in both inside and outside the church. Yet they keep on fighting. And I think that's something to be encouraged. And you notice the people I mentioned that they're lay people. I don't think that's a coincidence. I think really this will sound all Vatican II-y, but I really do think now is the time of the laity. In a lot of ways, like it was during the Arian crisis, this is a time for the laity to step up. And I think the laity is stepping up. When you see people like that, like the Lawlers, they have been involved in this for decades. Like I said, Phil was editor of Crisis Magazine, I think in the 1980s, I mean, a long time ago. And he's still fighting. He's still fighting for the truth. He's still fighting for the church along with his wife. And I think that's very encouraging to see that. Because again, it's not that we need all the people in the world on our side. We just simply need a faithful remnant. And yes, I will use that word remnant because you know, Michael Matt is a great person who's fighting for us. So I feel like that people are stepping up and they're really fighting. And I think the fact that we see things like Traditionis Custodes is clearly directed against traditionalist people in the, you know, fighting in the trenches, I think tells us that we're having success. Because if we were being completely obscure and nobody was listening to us, there would be no need for that motu proprio. Pope Francis wouldn't be worried. Neither would the bishops. They wouldn't be worried if not for the fact that we're really having success. And I'm seeing that directly. I will say, though, probably the most encouraging thing and that sign, the biggest hope was the young people. And yes, I'm, you know, with my gray hairs on my beard and my head, you know, I can call them young people because I'm obviously not a young person anymore. But I think that meeting the young people at Thomas More College and at Franciscan University was very encouraging. At Thomas More College, they actually had Bishop Snyder celebrate a traditional Latin mass. And then he led the school in a consecration of the school to the Sacred Heart. And it was very beautiful. It was very beautiful to see. I mean, here's a college forming young people. I'd never been to Thomas More College, by the way. It's a beautiful, it's a small, but it's a very beautiful campus up there in New Hampshire. And it was just great to see them inviting Bishop Snyder onto campus. He's consecrating the campus of the Sacred Heart of our Lord. And so I think that was very encouraging to see that these are the young people that are going to be going out into the world, being formed at places like Thomas More College. And then at Franciscan University, if you follow my Twitter account, you would know this, but I was involved in a debate. I was invited to participate in a debate on campus. And the debate was on whether or not restricting the Latin Mass is good for church unity. I, of course, was on the opposing side and saying it was not. What's interesting is that we won the debate. My side won the debate, but I'm not taking credit for it at all. This is what was encouraging about it, was that they had over 180 people there, and 86% voted that against the motion that restricting the Latin Mass would help church unity. But it's not like because I was some great debater and the other side was a terrible debater. In fact, the other side had some very good people, particularly the two people who were officially representing that side. They did a great job of saying their case. And by the way, just so people know in these debates, this, just because you're on a side, presenting a side, doesn't necessarily mean you agree with it wholeheartedly. Part of it is to hone your debate skills. But anyway, they did a great job. But the fact is the crowd was overwhelmingly in favor of the Latin Mass. Even the presenters who were saying we should restrict the Latin Mass, they'd almost always qualify their remarks with, oh yes, the Latin Mass is beautiful, it's wonderful, and they say great things about it. Now let's think about that for a minute. I was a student at Franciscan University in the master's program in the mid-90s. You probably could not find more than two or three people who even thought about the Latin Mass or knew anything about it. And now, fast forward to 2021, we have hundreds of kids at Franciscan University, which isn't known as a traditional campus, let's be honest, who are enthusiastic about the traditional Latin Mass, who are cheering for comments. When somebody would say something for the Latin Mass, they would cheer at the time. And there was some wonderful, if the video comes out, I'll share it on Twitter of the debate, because there was a number of good people, because everybody's allowed to make a statement. There's one kid in particular who just had a hilarious defense of the Latin Mass, which I really hope it goes public, because people will die when they see it. But my point is that these are clearly kids who love their faith. And I talked to a number of them afterwards. I talked to some of my kids who go there, they're friends, and they're just they're awesome kids. These are kids who love Jesus Christ, who love the Catholic Church, and they're not anti-Latin Mass. They're not like some crazy schismatic kids or anything like that. They just love Jesus, and they know that that the Latin Mass is a great way to love our Lord and to worship Him. And so, like I said, I've seen the development from the mid-90s to today, and how much that the embracing tradition, like traditional Latin Mass, but just tradition in general, has grown in the youth. And so that is a great sign of hope to me when I see that. Another thing, though, these are signs of hope I see in the church, and I really think they exist. Now, it's easy to look at the glass as half empty. I mean, heck, it's easy to look at the glass as almost completely empty, because at times it definitely does seem like that. Like I've mentioned already, when we see the synod on the synods, I mean, that sounds like a Dilbert cartoon. When we see Pope Francis meeting with Nancy Pelosi and all smiles, and there's no calling her to repentance or anything like that. When we see all this, it's very easy to get discouraged. Like, I think we've all know of people, some of them very public, who were hardcore Catholics, traditional Catholics even, who have become disillusioned, have become discouraged, have even left the church. And I think we can understand at least where they're coming from, why they'd be discouraged. But I will say that discouragement is from the devil. I remember one time I was in confession. This was probably 20 years ago or so. And this was it was actually somebody as a spiritual advisor at the time, spiritual director at the time. And I told him about being discouraged about something. I don't remember now what. And he said to me, Eric, he goes, discouragement is always from the devil. It's always from the devil. And that stuck with me. And that is true. It is from the devil. But it's easy to be tempted by discouragement when we see all that's going on in church. Because let's be honest, we have the Pope. We have almost every single bishop in the world who, if they're not actively opposed to the faith, they don't get the problem. At the very least, they don't get the problem. And we see your typical parish, you travel around, your typical diocesan parish is in shambles. People are leaving. Like I said, in our archdiocese, they're shutting down, they're trying to shut down parishes, which they should, because nobody's going. We still have a vocation crisis in a lot of places. And so we really do see that everything seems to be stacked against us. That means we're exactly where God wants us to be. Because now we know that when the victory comes, it will be from God. Because there's no way the victory comes from a schmo like me or a obscure bishop in Kazakhstan or any of the people who are fighting for us or any of us who are just kind of working out our salvation. It doesn't come from us. What we need, though, is all we need is a Gideon's army. I mean, it was very common in my Protestant days. We love to use the example of Gideon. I don't know why, and I don't feel like Catholics use it enough. So I might kind of revert back, put on my Protestant hat for a second, even though obviously Gideon is, you know, a Catholic hero. But to remind you of the story from the Old Testament, Gideon was going to go into battle. He had 32,000 warriors at his side. And God was like, nope, that's not how we're going to do it. And he basically what happened was he did a number of things, some a little bit bizarre, to get to pare down Gideon's army until finally he had only 300 men in his army. I think it was 300. Yeah, 300 men in his army. And then God was like, okay, now we're ready. Because if Gideon had won the battle with 32,000 men, you could just credit to Gideon, to the men, to the strength of the army. But if an army wins with 300, then you know it's from the Lord. You know it's from God. And that's where we are now. We are the 300. I mean, wasn't there a movie? Yeah, there was a movie called The 300. I never saw it. I have no idea what it was about even. But I remember when it came out. Anyway, we're the 300. That's what we are. We're the 300 of Gideon's army. There's not much of us left. I mean, let's be honest. There's just not many of us. But I will say we're growing, which is nice. So maybe we were only 100 20 years ago. When I say we, I might not have been part of that completely, but we're growing. And so we're getting closer to that 300 that God needs, I guess. We're going in the opposite direction as Gideon's army. Because when I go to my parish, I meet people all the time who are coming back to tradition, coming into faith. I just met somebody, a young family, beautiful young family. They were visiting our parish, and they just converted from Protestantism this past June. And they were going to the Latin Mass now, and they really were appreciative of people like Taylor Marshall. They mentioned him by name, of not hiding from the scandal, but explaining it. And I think that's exactly what we're trying to do here at Crisis. Is we're not hiding from the scandals in the crisis in the church. We're trying to explain it, explain how we can overcome it. And so, like I said, basically, I'm seeing these signs of hope. I'm seeing people coming back to tradition. I'm seeing Protestants becoming Catholic. In my parish, we have the largest adult conversion class we've had in memory. Maybe it was bigger, you know, 100 years ago or something like that. But in memory, we have 25 to 30 adults coming to church or being confirmed. Just 2 years ago, I think we had four or something like that. We have a very large youth confirmation class, very large First Communion class. And so things are good on the ground in a lot of places. And I think that's another sign for hope. And so I would urge you, don't get discouraged. Don't lose hope in this time of crisis. I mean, at Crisis, we run a lot of articles that talk about problems in the church. And I think they're important articles, and I think you should read them. But I don't think you should read them if they're going to cause you to have discouragement. What I try to have with my writers, I try to tell them, always try to have reasons for hope in there. Always try to give people how they should help them, advice on how they respond to the crisis. I don't think we can have our eyes closed and ignore it. But at the same time, I don't want people to be discouraged by all that's going on bad in the church. I was going to title this podcast originally, "It's Not All Bad News." I thought about making that the title. But I think ultimately, I really want a message of hope here. And what I want to do is I just want to finish here with this podcast, with this episode. I want to repeat the advice Bishop Schneider gave at the end of his my interview with him last week when I asked him, what can the average Catholic do? I want to repeat. He gave eight things you can do. Oh, let me hold up eight fingers. Eight things you can do. That wasn't a secret Masonic sign or anything like that, Anthony. This is just saying there's eight things. Had the wrong number of fingers up. Yeah, eight things we can do. Okay, so the first is continue your love for the church, for the church is greater than these crises. I think this is one of our biggest problems we can fall into, is that we don't see the woods for the trees. We see a rotten tree in front of us, and that's all we see, but we don't see the beautiful woods. Remember, with the Catholic Church, we have the fullness of the truth. We have the sacraments. We have beautiful spirituality. We have beautiful liturgies. We have all these great things. The communion of the saints, all of these great things we have in the Catholic Church. Don't lose sight of that. Keep your love for the church. Second, Bishop Snyder says, love deeply the Catholic faith. I mean, really love the Catholic faith. It is so beautiful. There's so many things about it that are so beautiful. Really love the Catholic faith. And the third point he makes follows on that. Study the Catholic faith. Get to know the Catholic faith. He mentions very clearly that he recommends studying the traditional catechisms because they're very clear and unambiguous. Study St. Thomas Aquinas. Study, just start basic. Study the Baltimore Catechism, the Catechism of Trent. There's a new series of books called Tradivox that's coming out. There's, I think, four volumes so far. There's going to be 20 volumes, which is a reprint of all the traditional catechisms going back 500-600 years, something like that. So study the Catholic faith, especially in the traditional catechisms. The fourth thing to do is read the life of the saints. Bishop Schneider says this will give us hope in this time of crisis. And I really think this is a great idea. Reading the stories of the saints is great because they went through a lot. I mean, they went through a lot of bad times. So it's not like our crisis is the first crisis we've ever experienced. But if we want eventually a book to be written about us, a life of us as a saint, which is hopefully our goal, how do we respond to the crisis? We need to look at how saints in the past have responded. And so read the life of the saints. This is just an aside on that one. One of the things my wife and I have done ever since our kids were very young, our oldest is 24 now, even since she was first reading age, every night at bedtime, we pray together, of course, as a family, and then we give them, the children who are reading age, we give them a half hour to read, and they have to read either from the Bible or the lives of the saints. And I think I really appreciate that. We've been doing that now for, well, she's 24, about 15 years or so, something more than that. And I really think that's helped. I'm hoping that has helped them to see how saints before have responded to these crises, so it doesn't take them by surprise, so to speak. The fifth thing Bishop Schneider says is love the liturgy, especially the traditional mass. Love the liturgy. I mean, really, the liturgy is beautiful. Yes, I do know in your typical parish, it often is covered up and it's not beautiful. Well, then find a parish where it is beautiful and go there. But love the liturgy. The sixth thing is receive the sacraments frequently, particularly the sacrament of confession. Boy, isn't this great advice? We need the sacrament of confession so much. I went to go to the sacrament of confession a few weeks ago at my parish, and because of my own fault and realizing something I missed out because I got there. And I was the person before me is the last one to go in, and I got very upset, and I was so upset about it. And I realized, boy, I really did need that confession, didn't I? So of course I went 2 days later, I went back. So, go to confession regularly. That's the only way you're going to have the strength to fight. So go to confession. And so that's a great, advice as well. The seventh thing that, Bishop Snyder says, practice Eucharistic adoration. I think this is a great idea to do this is to practice Eucharistic adoration. Go to adoration. Hopefully your parish has it. Find a parish that does, and really adore the Lord. When I was in Steubenville at Franciscan, I made sure I went into the port, which is the little chapel that has perpetual adoration there, because it's just so important that we go to adoration. And then the eighth thing that Bishop Schneider says is to do works of charity. I think sometimes we forget this one. I think this is one, I'm glad Bishop Schneider said that, because we kind of know, okay, love the faith, study the faith, read the lives of saints, you know, go to confession, things like that. But do works of charity. Don't ever stop doing works of charity. Find ways to help others. I think right now, especially, I think maybe try to find those who are being hit by the COVID regulations, maybe losing their job or whatever the case may be, and help them out. We're supposed to actually first help our fellow Catholics. It doesn't mean we don't help those who are outside the church, but St. Paul even talks about this, that we help our brothers and sisters in need first. And so if there's somebody at your parish who lost their job, or maybe they just had a baby and they need help, help them out. Find ways to help them, whether it might be financial, it might be in other ways, but help them out if you can. So I really would encourage people to do works of charity. Okay, so really, I just wanted this podcast to be an opportunity to give people some encouragement, give people some hope in this time of crisis. Like I said, I fully expect, in fact, we'll see if I'm right about this. Maybe next week I'll mention it in the podcast. I fully expect that this podcast will not do well. It won't have lots of views, won't have lots of listens, but I'm hoping that those who do, who are listening into this podcast, remember to have hope that there is a lot of good stuff going on out there. It doesn't make the news when some kid in college decides to go back to confession and goes to adoration. It just makes the news when Pope Francis meets with Nancy Pelosi. But I think in the eyes of God, perhaps the first thing is the more important and the more significant, because I think that's the foundation for the future. So have hope. Don't be discouraged. Remember, discouragement is always from the devil. And until next time, God love you.